body, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, held a convention for rostered ministers out in Phoenix a couple of weeks ago. I did not make any plans to attend because Phoenix in the summer did not sound at all attractive to me. And this was not only just Phoenix in July, but this was Phoenix in July in an enduring heat wave. But a lot of my colleagues did go, and so the catchphrase quickly became, "But it's a dry heat." Better than East Coast humidity, even at 120 degrees. And this somewhat lighthearted attempt to make light of the heat gave the Arizona natives the prompting to give a lot of advice about just how much water you actually need in the desert, and especially about how much water you should bring with you if you would want to go on a sightseeing hike, which apparently people do, even over 100 degrees. Someone wrote in on a clergy webpage, "You don't know how quickly dehydrated you can be in the desert." Because the desert is a stressful place. It takes more work to survive. So come prepared. I don't know that any of you thought that you were coming to worship this Sunday morning in a desert, but you have, at least by one definition. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the city of Butler is what you would call a food desert. By 2021 statistics, 24.2% of our city residents live underneath the poverty line. And with the closing of Friedman's, which was two blocks down the street a couple of years ago, there are no grocery stores within a five-mile radius of the downtown of our city. And these two statistics together make us what is titled a food desert. If you live with little money, you have a hard time getting a car, which makes it hard to access a grocery store. And so many people depend on Dollar General or Rite Aid for their groceries or some of the smaller convenience stores. But these don't carry the fruits and fresh vegetables and meats, which are the things that help people be healthy. And so hence, it's harder to survive. It's not a natural phenomenon the way the desert of the Southwest is. It's the result of policy and profit, but food deserts can be just as stressful as regular deserts. I could continue to describe the statistics of our city to you, but the many of you who spend time here on Monday nights at our community dinner over the last few months, you don't need me to continue on with statistics. For those of you who may be worshiping here for the first time every single Monday, our congregation has a free meal that is offered to all comers. We try never to send anyone away without food, but this situation has been, the already difficult situation of our food desert city has been increasingly stressed with increased inflation, decreased federal nutrition assistance, and other changes in feeding ministries and other places in the city. The numbers are high and are getting higher, and our commitment to never sending anyone away is led to a lot of creativity on the part of our cooks, no small amount of sweat, some uncertainty in planning. All of you who contribute to the ministry of this congregation with your financial giving help make this ministry happen, and some of you volunteer also to be especially tired on Tuesday mornings for long lines of people in a desert. Test compassion and patience and endurance. Life in the desert is stressful. Whether you're surviving or whether you're serving, The harsh conditions can deplete you, and sometimes it's easy to get nervous, to see what you don't have, to guard protectively what you do. Whether that's an extra bottle of water, an extra sandwich, or an extra moment of quiet and sanity. When the disciples of Jesus with the crowds go out to a deserted place in today's gospel reading, they weren't originally thinking of the stresses of the desert. In fact, their long walk was meant as initially a retreat of sorts. All of them, Jesus, the disciples, the crowds, have received the shattering news that John the Baptist has been assassinated by King Herod, his head gruesomely served on a platter amidst the crudités and canapés at King Herod's lavish birthday party. But for the common people, the news was like hearing about Kennedy's assassination or the attacks on September 11th. The everyday world with John's death suddenly seemed drained of meaning, and Jesus himself, in need of some quiet time to mourn and figure out what this all means for him, catches the first ferry out of town for quiet time in the wilderness. But the crowds, the disciples, as we all do when we've heard shattering news, they need to be with one another and with him. And so when he gets off the boat, a large crowd has already assembled in his deserted place. There they are with all their burdens that they have carried with them like water into the desert, their fear and their sicknesses, their tears. And Jesus has compassion and heals them. But everyone seems to have forgotten about food. And this is a deserted place. And by the end of the day, the wilderness retreat comes for the disciples, the stressful landscape of scarcity and fear. This is a deserted place, they say to Jesus at dinner time, by which they mean, this is a food desert. There's no grocery store nearby, and so it's time to send everyone back to the town so they can buy food for themselves and so the disciples can get some rest. The whole story has echoes of an earlier episode in the people's history when their ancestors fled from slavery under King Pharaoh in Egypt. Safe in the wilderness on the other side of the sea, their many great-grandparents took a few deep breaths of freedom, and then they panicked. Because while they were free, the meat and the cucumbers and the garlic and the cantaloupes, that's an actual list from Scripture, by the way, all of those things had been left behind in Egypt. It's a paradox. Hope and trust in God can lead you directly into the wilderness, to the deserted place. A need for Jesus leads the crowd to follow him on foot, just as the trust in God leading them out of slavery in Egypt led the people of Israel to follow Moses. A desire to serve Jesus as he comes to us in people needing food leads this congregation to serve every single Monday night in this unnatural food desert of poverty. But there's something about the desert that can quickly turn trust into test, that makes even the most determined disciples start wondering whether they've brought enough to survive the journey. We've only got 5 loaves and 2 fish, the disciples assess. Jesus says, no need to send them into town. You give them something to eat. If you have ever been asked to help someone else, but with the sense that you don't quite have the money or the energy or the wisdom or the patience or the time, Then you know what the disciples must have been feeling in that moment. It's the overwhelming nature of statistical calculations in a desert that really drain you. How much water do you need to bring for a hike in 120 degrees? It's death if you don't bring enough. 5 loaves, 2 fish, 5,000 men, uncounted women and children, 12 disciples. Three community dinner coordinators, plus a lot of others, dozens of volunteers, including, thanks be to God, a choir director who likes to do the dishes. Pounds of venison, hundreds of pounds of venison from hunters sharing the harvest. This grant this year, but what about next? And what are the numbers? Is it closer to the beginning of the month or the end? But with Jesus in the wilderness, the deserted place, and for us, the statistics cannot account for one thing, and that is the grace of God. The grace of Jesus, which overflows in compassion. We have only 5 loaves and 2 fish, say the disciples. Jesus says, bring them to me. And don't bring only the loaves and the fish. Bring your fears and bring your fatigue. You give them something to eat, Jesus says, to them and to us, not because he wants us to figure out this desert thing on our own. You give them something to eat, he says, because you are connected to me, and he is the source of blessing. He is the bread of life. Life in the desert is a stressful place, but by the grace of God, it's also the place to discover Jesus taking, blessing, breaking, and giving. To you, to me, to the crowds, to all who come. It's the place where God cares for us, not always as we think we want, but in the sustaining way that we need. When the people of Israel wandered in the desert and cried from hunger in their first days of freedom, God met them not with cantaloupe and cucumbers, but with manna and quail. What are these among so many, say the disciples? With Jesus, they become a feast for thousands with leftovers, because God has a heart for the stressed. God has patience with those who are squeezed by Herod's greed or Pharaoh's ferocity. And Jesus still invites us into his heart and into his way of life. When I hear this story now in this place at this time, what I hear him saying is, remember that I'm the one that takes and blesses and breaks and gives. Jesus hasn't left us and gone somewhere where we can't find him. He's not off in a deserted place. He is has been raised from death and is alive in the power of his Spirit, and he is with us in the desert of our lives, in the desert of this community, and in the desert of our souls when we are parched and thirsty and need his help. He's got more compassion than we can imagine. And our service starts with that, not with statistics, but with grace. It's in his spirit of abundance and generosity, his love for the people in their tiredness and their uncertainty, with his outstretched hand in blessing, with his deep compassion, that he says to us, okay, bring me what you got.